Across easternmost parts of England as that weather front starts to edge back westwards again. But somebody somewhere across the heart of England is going to stay cloudy and wet all day long. As a consequence, it will be chilly, and I wouldn't be at all surprised again if some places don't get much higher than around 6 Celsius. By and large, where you see most of the sunshine, you'll see the best of the temperatures. But I think you'll do well to reach double figures. Most of us will be stuck at around 9, possibly 10 degrees for much of the day. Now, that front will continue to move its way back westwards again as we go through Tuesday night and into Wednesday. Further east, though, after a clear night, it'll be a frosty start on Wednesday with some sunshine, although another frontal system will then come in from the North Sea, clouding things up with further showery outbreaks of rain. And we will have to look to the east for our weather through the rest of this week. Easterly wind will bring quite a bit of cloud and some showers from time to time. There will be some brighter spells, but at this time of year, with an easterly wind, it's never going to get all that warm. So a fairly chilly prospect through the rest of this week, with some showers for most of us at times as well. Howard, back to you.
Many thanks, John. John Hammond with the weather. Now, our new book of the week. Simon Russell Beale reads Ben McIntyre's revealing new biography of Kim Philby, A Spy Among Friends. Episode 1 finds us in Beirut, where two men, both employed by MI6, face each other. One of them has led a life of pure deception.
Sorry for getting right on with it, Philby, old boy. I don't have time to postpone this. Unfortunately, it's not very pleasant. I came to tell you that your past has caught up with you.
Have you all gone mad once again? You want to start all that after all these years? You'll be a laughingstock.
Listen, Kim. The game's up. We know what you did. We've penetrated the KGB. There's no doubt in my mind anymore that you were a Soviet agent.
Who told you that nonsense? Come on, let's have another cup of tea. Look at how stupid this seems.
Two middle-aged spies are sitting in an apartment in Beirut, lying courteously to one another as evening approaches. They are English. So English that the habit of politeness that binds them together and keeps them apart never falters for a moment. A microphone, cunningly concealed beneath the sofa, picks up the conversation and passes it along a wire through a small hole in the wainscoting and into the next room, where a third man sits hunched over a turning tape recorder, straining to make out the words through Bakelite headphones. The two men are old friends. They have known each other for nearly 30 years, but they are bitter foes now, combatants on opposing sides of a brutal conflict. Kim Philby and Nicholas Elliott learned the spy trade during the Second World War. When that war was over, they rose together through the ranks of British intelligence, sharing every secret. They belonged to the same clubs, drank in the same bars, wore the same well-tailored clothes, and married women of their own tribe. But all that time, Philby had one secret he never shared. He was covertly working for his Soviet spy masters. Elliot has flown to Beirut to extract a confession. He wants to know how many have died through Philby's betrayal of their friendship. He needs to know the truth. But still, the atmosphere remains calm, though taut. The words polite. More tea is poured.
Look at how stupid this seems.
Kim, if you were in my place, if you knew what I know...
I wouldn't talk to you the way you're talking to me.
And how would you talk to me?
I would offer you a drink instead of this lousy tea.
It was meant to be a joke, but Elliot did not laugh, and he did not offer him a drink. The word most consistently used to describe Kim Philby was charm, that intoxicating, beguiling, and occasionally lethal English quality. His manners were exceptional. He loved to laugh, and he loved to drink, and to listen with deep sincerity and rapt curiosity. A stutter, which came and went, added to his appeal, betraying an attractive glimmer of fragility. Philby's real first name was Harold, but his father nicknamed his son Kim after the eponymous hero in the popular Rudyard Kipling novel. Brought up by an Indian nanny, Philby's first language was a sort of nursery Punjabi. Like Kipling's Kim, he was a white child who could pass for an Indian. The name stuck forever, but its aptness would not emerge for years. The fictional Kim had two distinct personalities. He was a two-sided man. As the Times correspondent in the Spanish Civil War, Philby had narrowly cheated death in late 1937 when a Republican shell landed near the car he was sitting in, eating chocolates and drinking brandy, killing all the other three fellow war correspondents. Philby escaped with a minor head wound and a reputation for great pluck. General Franco himself had pinned a medal on the young war reporter. On the outbreak of the Second World War, Philby had been one of only 15 newspaper correspondents selected to join the British Expeditionary Force sent to France. He wrote wry, distinctive dispatches.
Many expressed disappointment at the slow tempo of the overture to Armageddon. They expected danger, and they found damp.
Philby continued reporting as the Germans advanced, and finally took a ship for England with such haste that he was forced to leave behind his luggage. His expenses claim for lost items became a Fleet Street legend.
Camel hair overcoat, 2 years' wear, 15 guineas. Dunhill pipe, 2 years old and all the better for it, £1.10.
Philby was a fine journalist, but his ambitions lay elsewhere. He wanted to join MI6, but like every would-be spy, he faced a conundrum. How do you join an organisation to which you cannot apply because it does not formally exist? In the end, Philby's entry into the Secret Services turned out to be straightforward. He simply dropped a few hints among influential acquaintances and waited for an invitation. When it came, Philby was assigned to the Special Operations Executive, SOE, the organisation created, in Winston Churchill's words, to set Europe ablaze by operating behind enemy lines. Philby specialised in demolition, wireless communication and subversion, and gave lectures on propaganda for which, having been a journalist, he was considered suitably trained. He was champing at the bit, eager to join the real wartime intelligence battle. He escaped to London whenever he could, and it was during one of these getaways that he encountered John Nicholas Reed Elliot, who could never recall exactly where their first meeting took place. Was it the bar in the heart of the MI6 building in Mayfair, the most secret drinking hole in the world? Or perhaps White's, Elliot's club? Or the Athenaeum, which was Philby's? They were creatures of the same world. Elliot's father, the headmaster of Eton, and Philby's, a noted Arab scholar, had been contemporaries and friends at Cambridge. Both sons lived under the shadow of imposing but distant patriarchs whose approval they longed for and never quite won. Elliot wore his old Etonian tie with pride. Philby cherished his Westminster School scarf. They struck up a friendship at once. They found they had much to talk and joke about within the snug confines of absolute secrecy. Nick Elliot's first job at MI6 was to help run a British agent codenamed U-35. Jona von Ustinov was a German journalist and a fierce secret opponent of Nazism. He was universally known as Klopp, Russian slang for bedbug, a nickname that derived from his rotund appearance, of which he was intensely proud. Klopp also wore a monocle and had a deceptively bumbling demeanour. His son was Peter Ustinov, later to become the great comic actor and writer. Klopp Ustinov and Nick Elliot established an instant rapport and would remain friends for life. Their partnership would prove to be extraordinarily effective, but rather fattening. A fine chef, Klopp tended to turn up unexpectedly, carrying devilled kidneys inside a leather top hat case. Through Philby, Elliot was introduced to a fraternity of ambitious, clever, hard-drinking intelligence officers, the Young Turks of MI5 and MI6. This informal, almost entirely male group often gathered in off-duty hours at the home of a wealthy art dealer who worked in MI5. His Chelsea residence, with its large wine cellar, became an open-house salon for spies. Here might be found Philby's friend, Guy Burgess, extravagant in his homosexuality, frequently drunk, faintly malodorous, and always supremely entertaining. Here too came their friend Anthony Blunt, a Cambridge art scholar now ensconced at the heart of MI5. Another regular was Victor Lord Rothschild, the aristocratic chief of counter-sabotage at MI5. Even by the heavy drinking standards of wartime, the spies were spectacular boozers. Alcohol helped to blunt the stress of clandestine war, serving as both a lubricant and a bond.
Philby was a formidable drinker and held to the arcane theory that serious drinkers should never take exercise or make sudden or violent movements, since this would provoke a violent headache.
Nick Elliott hero-worshipped Philby, but he also loved him with a powerful male adoration that was unrequited, unsexual, and unstated. He even began to dress like Philby and bought the same expensive ebony-handled umbrella from James Smith and Sons of Oxford Street, an umbrella that befitted an establishment man of the world, but one with panache. Their relationship grew still closer when both were plucked from the outer reaches of British intelligence and placed at the very centre, in Section 5 of MI6, the division devoted to counterintelligence. Philby would be fighting German espionage in Spain, while Elliot would be doing the same in Nazi-occupied Holland from the next-door office at Section 5 headquarters. But infiltrating secret agents into Holland was exceptionally difficult. In a plot that smacks of James Bond, a Dutch agent was put ashore near a seafront casino, wearing full evening dress covered with a rubber suit to keep him dry. Once on land, he peeled off his waterproofs and began to mingle with the crowd on the front in his dinner jacket, which had been sprinkled with brandy to reinforce the partygoer's image. Formally dressed and alcoholically perfumed, the agent successfully made it past the German guards and picked up a radio previously dropped by parachute. The echo of 007 may not be coincidental. Among the young blades of British intelligence at this time was an officer in the Naval Intelligence Department named Ian Fleming, who had been at prep school with Elliot. Section 5 was based in a large Victorian house in St Albans, codenamed War Station XB. Kim Philby and his girlfriend Aileen rented a cottage on the outskirts of the town. Philby had been introduced to his future wife on the day war was declared by Flora Solomon, a friend from Cambridge. The daughter of a Jewish-Russian gold tycoon, Solomon had been hired by Marks & Spencer, where Aileen Furze worked undercover as a store detective.
Aileen belonged to that class now out of fashion called County. She was typically English, slim and attractive, fiercely patriotic. Kim found an avid listener in Aileen, and the next I knew, they were sharing a flat.
Elliot liked Aileen almost as much as he liked Philby. Indeed, she was just the sort of wife he hoped for himself. Loyal, discreet, patriotic, and willing to laugh at his jokes. The Philbys' home soon became a gathering place for the young intelligence officers of Section 5, where the doors and various bottles were always open. Philby and Elliot seized every opportunity to get down to London in order to cultivate contacts with other intelligence sections, while also visiting their clubs and, in the summer, watching the cricket together at Lord's. One morning in 1941, Kim Philby caught the train to London, taking with him, as usual, a bulging briefcase and a long visiting list. He also carried a detailed description of the workings of Section 5, its personnel, aims, operations, failures and successes, written out in longhand in neat, tiny writing. After completing his round of meetings at MI5 and MI6, Philby did not head to the bar beneath MI6 nor to his club. Instead, he descended into St James's Park underground station. He let the first train leave without boarding. Then he waited until every other passenger had boarded the next one before slipping on just as the doors closed. Two stops later, he alighted and caught a train in the opposite direction. Then he hopped on a moving bus. Finally certain that he was not being followed, dry-cleaned in spy jargon, Philby made his way to a park, where a stocky, fair-haired man was waiting for him on a bench. They shook hands. Philby handed over the contents of his briefcase and then headed to King's Cross to catch the train home to St Albans. Had Nick Elliott examined those documents, he would have been amazed and then mortified. Philby had written this about his best friend.
Mr Nicholas Elliott, 24, 5 feet 9 inches, brown hair, prominent lips, black glasses, ugly and rather pig-like to look at. Good brain, good sense of humour. Likes a drink, but was recently very ill, and now as a consequence drinks little. He is in charge of Holland.
Elliot would have been still more astonished to discover that the man hurrying away into the night with the bundle of papers was an officer of the NKVD, Stalin's intelligence agency, and that Mr. Harold Philby was an experienced Soviet spy of 8 years' standing. Codenamed Sonny.
A Spy Among Friends was written by Ben McIntyre and read by Simon Russell Beale. It was abridged by Barry Johnston and was a Heavy Entertainment production for BBC Radio 4. The shipping forecast follows in just under a minute. To see us from here to there, sailing by. BBC Radio 4. Now, the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Tuesday, the 25th of March. There are warnings of gales in Biscay, Fitzroy, Sole, Fastnet, Irish Sea, Shannon, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. New lows expected northern France, 1007, Western France 1006 and Hebrides 1013 by 1800 Tuesday. New high expected Sweden 1030 by same time. Low Iceland 976 moving away northwards by that time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking north at Sira. Southeasterly 5 or 6 becoming variable 4 later. Fair. Good. South at Sira east 40s. Southeasterly backing northeasterly later, 5 or 6.